Welcome to episode 2 of the show, Graham. Happy hump day, everybody. Adam Alter of Razorback Nation here with Chris Bond from Arkansas Sports 360. How you doing today, Chris?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. We have real, live, actual football to talk about today.
Yeah, if you're new to the podcast, and odds are you are, considering this is only the second one we've ever done, our goal here is to provide you good sports radio at your convenience. You can't always be listening to the shows you like, but with this podcast, you can take it where you want to go and listen to it when you want to listen to it. Lots to discuss today. Obviously, week one of the college football season, mid-season finale of Breaking Bad, which was somewhat epic, per usual. Chris, you were out in Oregon this weekend, so lots on the show today. But, of course, let's start with the Razorbacks' Game 1 win over Jacksonville State. What's your takeaway?
Well, I want to be very upfront. I didn't watch a minute of this game. Did not see one single snap, one second.
And for good reason.
Yeah, I was out of town. However, I have read all there was to read on the game. I have talked to tens of people who were there. and my phone all throughout the game was blowing up. And it sounds like a game that I have seen 20 times over the last four seasons. So play by the offensive and defensive lines. Really good passing game. Really poor secondary play,
yeah,
and a whole bunch of missed tackles. This game has played out over and over and over again. Did I forget anything?
No, I mean, that's about right. I mean, it is amazing how this team, since the Petrino era, even though that's not technically the Petrino era anymore, might as well be for all intents and purposes, they always seem to start the season like this. They don't come out – I mean, with the exception of last year when they really beat the tar out of Missouri State, but – they don't exactly come out guns a-blazing. They don't exactly come out and pitch a shutout. You always walk away wondering, can this team run the ball? And you always walk away wondering, can this team stop the run? As far as the line, I thought the pass blocking was actually pretty good. Tyler got sacked once and really only had to escape pressure a minimal amount of times beyond that. You know, the run blocking was all right. It definitely had some bad moments with some negative plays, but I think they're okay. I'm much more concerned about the defense.
Sure. I mean, and I think a lot of people assumed, based on what we saw in the Cotton Bowl, and we've covered that, that Paul Haynes and this retooled staff were going to be miracle workers. And while I think the staff has definitively upgraded, the thing that people kept forgetting was that as collectively bad as the defense has been the last 4 years, they lost the four best playmakers, four of the better defensive playmakers that Arkansas has had over the last decade. Jake Beckett on the line, Tremaine Thomas at safety, Jericho Nelson at that safety linebacker position, and then the all-time leading tackler, I think, in the history of – or the first guy ever to lead Arkansas 4 years in a row in tackling,
in
Jerry Franklin. So you knew there were going to be some growing pains for this defense. What you thought you weren't going to see – that apparently we saw a lot of on Saturday were the missed tackles. And you had John L. Smith talk about on Monday about how they were going to set up these new tackling stations in practice. And it's like, how can you possibly have a defense, 11 guys plus backups, made up of people who cannot tackle? That is mind-boggling, particularly against a team like Jacksonville State. I just don't understand how that can continue to be an issue, especially with the emphasis they put on it in the preseason. I don't understand it.
I'm with you, because I don't understand how there could ever be a defense that is bad at tackling. You know,
that's what you do.
To an outsider, if you play defense, your main goal, your number one task is to tackle the man with the ball. It's as simple as that. Yet, when I spoke with the defensive players and the defensive coaches going into the season, I said, you know, what are you focusing on? What are you working on? They just kept talking about tackling. And I'm
right.
Like, well, shouldn't that be understood? I mean, shouldn't you be talking about schemes and strategies? I mean, if you're still having to talk about the fundamentals of tackling, you're way behind the game at this point. I don't get it.
No, it's mind-boggling. I mean, there were some bright spots. I mean, I think it all goes back to what, you know, Paul Haynes told me in the spring when he said, I said, who's your best football player on defense? And he said, Ross Rasner and Tenarius Wright. Well, guess who the two guys were that led the team in tackles?
You know, I've loved Rasner since he was an underclassman. Every time the kid's on the field, he makes plays. Tank Wright and Alonzo Highsmith, you know, for all the camp they missed, they combined for 15 tackles, which is really good.
Not bad.
I don't remember a single play either one of them made except for the fumble Highsmith recovered. That was a very quiet 15 tackles. I remember Rassner because it seemed like every tackle he was in on, he finished with 11, including 1.5 for loss, and he was part of that forced fumble. But
yeah, broke up.
If you had told me he had 20 tackles in that game, I would have believed you. It seemed like he was everywhere.
And that's kind of how he is. And we've heard John L. Smith compare him multiple times to Jericho Nelson. And that's the guy he backed up last year. And that's who Ross Reisner reminds me a lot of. You know,
absolutely.
Minus the New Orleans drawl and the dreadlocks, you know.
And the sledgehammer.
Right. But I mean, Reisner is true. I mean, he's a good football player. I think he's their best defensive player.
He's their best defensive player?
Yeah, I do.
That's saying a lot.
I think as of today, and I think we may wind up at the end of the year looking back and going, yep, Reisner was their best.
It wouldn't surprise me if he led the team in tackles, that's for sure.
He'll lead the team in tackles. He's so versatile. You know, he's not a huge guy, but he can get in there and mix it up to stop the run. He's pretty good in pass coverage. I mean, he had a pass breakup the other night. It seemed like all throughout camp he was a guy who was – you know, breaking up passes. He just pops. He makes plays.
Paul Haynes likes to say he flashes.
Yes.
He flashes on the film. And Rassner does that.
Yep, and he's a thumper, you know, as Paul Haynes says. He's not afraid to get in there and mix it up and you know, hit guys and tackle. And he can actually tackle, which is apparently, you know, they played, I don't know, 30 guys on defense, and like three of them can tackle really well. I'm sorry, I don't mean to keep going back to that. It's just mind-boggling.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Like I said, if you're still having to worry about the fundamentals of tackling, you're way behind where Alabama and LSU are, and that's who you need to be comparing yourself to. We talked a little bit about this last week. Are you surprised that they did not come away with an interception, the Arkansas defense?
No. You know, it's just like, I mean, am I surprised that Alabama
won? Let me reword it. Is it concerning that Arkansas did not come away with a single interception in this game?
Yes and no. I mean, how many times did Jacksonville State pass? Well, I mean, they put the ball up 37 times.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean,
with bad quarterback play.
Yeah. You would think that once out of 37 times against Jacksonville State, yeah, you would think somebody would come down with an interception. I mean, and what, 1, 2, 3, 4 pass breakups. So there weren't just a whole lot of plays on the ball. It's concerning.
Has been a running theme from the Arkansas defense, you know, back when Voldemort was here,
yeah.
You know, up until now, you know, particularly a lack of interceptions from cornerbacks. The interceptions this team would get would come from safeties usually and occasionally mm-hmm. linebackers. Greg Gatson had one interception last year.
Yep.
The year before, I think Darius Winston might have had one in like garbage time against like a terrible team when it was thrown right to him. But the cornerbacks don't make plays like that. They might break up a pass, but they're not picking it off and getting you yardage.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Is it the athlete? Is it the scheme?
That's a great question. Maybe that's something we need to ask Paul Haynes. Once he's had a couple games under his belt, if this continues, you know, because you could really explain it away the previous 4 years under your boy Voldemort. It was, you know, I mean, okay, it was the scheme, it was the guys they had there. Well, now they've got Tevin Mitchell, who's an all SEC guy. He winds up with a pass breakup. You know, maybe you can explain part of that. A lot of people aren't throwing to him, to his side of the field. Okay, that still doesn't excuse what was happening on the other side of the field. And, you know.
Oh, my boy, Five Starius, Grandpa Winston. He's in there, first quarter, gets burned, gets yanked, never goes back on the field again except on special teams. What is going on with Darius Winston? I know we harped on him last week, but all he did was give us more reason to harp this week.
Yeah, you know, and I defended him last week, and I wanted to wait and see him this season in action, you know, see if the new coaching took effect, see how this extra weight on him worked. And up to this point, it just continues to look like the same guy who, for whatever reason, for all his physical gifts, has not been able to make plays. But, hey, how about Kalon Kellebrew?
He makes plays.
He makes plays. Well, a great story. You know, this team is full of great stories this year, and he's definitely one of them. I mean, a guy that walked on from Mississippi Valley State. He's originally from Little Rock. he comes out, I think he'll be in the starting lineup this week. I think Darius has probably started his last game at Arkansas.
Well, the depth chart for this game that they put out, Arkansas puts out at the beginning of the week, had no changes. It still listed Darius as the starter at that right cornerback position. But John L. Smith made it very clear in his Monday press conference that is an ongoing battle. Yesterday, in the first parts of practice that the media is allowed into, Kelly Brew was taking as many, if not more, first-team reps than Winston. And like you said, when you watch the games, you see Kelly Brew make plays. Was he perfect? No. Did he get beat on a play here or there? Yes, including one of the touchdowns. But he seems to know what he's doing, and he makes plays. You know, Darius, the reason he got burned on that one play, he never looked for the ball. He's just looking at the receiver who makes the catch for – it was like a long third down, and it was like a 30-yard play or something. I don't see a football player. I don't see any football instincts in Darius Winston.
And what's frustrating, and I know I just said this, but he has the physical tools. When the scouts come in and they look at his 40 time and his testing times and his height and his weight – and you think, you know what, this guy should be able to play the position, and then you get him out there in a game, and it's just not working for him.
And I think, you know, I think personality has something to do with this. When you speak with Kelly Brew, you see a guy who's passionate. It's very clear in talking with him that it means a lot to him to get out on the field. He wants to help the team. He wants to make plays. When you talk to Darius, it's very just blah, yeah. Blah, blah. He doesn't have anything to say that's, you know, interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, he doesn't have a lot of passion behind it. Yeah, some guys just don't like to talk to the media, though. You can't beat him up for not having a lot to say.
Well, at this point, I'm looking for reasons why he's not producing, because, like you said, he's got physical ability, but he's not using it. Not that I'm seeing.
Not in the way you would expect, no. He is definitely he's been a disappointment. But, I mean, again, this all goes back to the storylines from this game, I feel like, are the exact same storylines from the previous 4 years. And we could debate about, is this the Petrino era? Is it not? It might as well be. I mean, these are his guys. This is his, you know, his coaching staff. These are, you know, his schemes and approaches to practice. So, yeah, in a lot of ways, it still is the Petrino era. And I hate that I missed the game, but it sounds like I missed a game that I have seen 20 other times.
My major takeaway from game one is this is a team that is not ready for Alabama. This is a team that there is a lot that needs to take place between now and week three if they want to upset the now number one team in the country. Plain and simple, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you. This thing would be a whole lot more interesting if we didn't agree all the time, but I can't, like, take the other side of the coin just for the sake of taking the other side of it. This team is not ready. And, you know, I thought it was funny. I mean, of course a coach is going to say this, but the way Paul Petrino put it, someone asked him, are you afraid this team's going to overlook Louisiana Monroe and be looking too far ahead to Alabama? And Paul was like, we're not even good enough to look past tomorrow's practice. Like, this team is just not very good. Part of that is coach speak, but I think there's also some truth behind it. There are some things this team has got to get better at. We've been talking about the defensive side of the football. Yes, the pass blocking was better. You know, the one sack that was given up was Travis Swanson, which is very unusual for that guy. I mean, he's All-American caliber, All-SEC caliber. He's a big-time player. Alvin Bailey's really good. But they have those three new guys, two of them walk-ons or one a former walk-ons.
Yeah.
The run blocking was not good.
It wasn't terrible. There were some bad parts, but it wasn't terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't good. I mean, is not terrible going to beat Alabama? And
no.
That's what we're talking about
yeah,
here.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So they have strides to make. The encouraging thing in talking to the players and to people who watch the game, but I trust the players' judgment more than, you know, yours, for example. Sorry. Niall Davis said, look, the issues with the run blocking was not physical. It wasn't that Arkansas was getting beaten up and, you know, getting pushed off the ball by Jacksonville State. They were just assignment errors and execution errors. And if that's the deal against Jacksonville State, you can live with that. you have time to get that fixed.
But you cannot make those same mistakes against Alabama because they have the athletes that might physically overpower Arkansas's O-line if they're not properly prepared.
Oh, they have to be very technically sound against Alabama. I mean, and it sounds so cliche and old-timey football coaches, but you cannot beat yourself. You cannot give Alabama, you know, a single play in that game. You've got to be perfect. I think the offensive line has a chance to be better this year than last year, but they do have to get better in a hurry. I'm not worried about the passing game. I think the running game's going to be fine. They got to hold on to the dang football.
Yeah, you can't fumble three times against Alabama or you're sunk. You're right out of the gates. I agree with you. The passing game is good. You know, Mitchell showed playmaking ability. Obviously, we knew Greg had playmaking ability. They basically didn't play with Kobe Hamilton. He made two catches and left the game after about five plays in because he got dinged in the head, and he took a shot on that play. Yeah. Javonte Herndon, a great surprise because, you know, Herndon and Horton have always kind of been linked coming in the same recruiting class, kind of supposed to be the next guys after the big three that left. Is Julian Horton even on this team? I mean, he is. He made a tackle on special teams.
Yeah.
He's not showing up in the box score. And I thought the same of Herndon, but guess who showed up in a big way? Javonte Herndon. Career game for that kid.
Yeah, and good for him. I mean, he had really struggled in camp. Coaches decided – I mean, they were trying to give him a shot to start. They put him at whatever, the X receiver.
Right.
They wanted him to be a starting receiver. It wasn't happening for him, so they move him to back up Kobe Hamilton, and all of a sudden he starts having a good camp. He flourishes. He comes in and fills in for Kobe the other night, has the team's longest touchdown, 63 yards. I mean, he looked really good, but, you know, they've got to continue to get that sort of production out of him. But I like the depth that they're showing in the passing game. We'll see against Alabama. This is going to sound crazy. I'm going to make a prediction. I think these receivers, and we'll talk about this more next week, I'm sure, this receiving core is better suited to face Alabama than a receiving core that featured Joe and Jarius.
If only because of size.
Right.
Because Alabama's corners have made a living just punishing receivers physically. I remember a play very specifically last year in Tuscaloosa. It happened right in front of me on the field. Jarius Wright runs like a quick dig or a quick out or something, catches the ball, and gets obliterated by the Arkansas or Alabama cornerback. I think he may have held onto the ball, but the message had been sent. You're not going to just run around on us and catch big plays. Brandon Mitchell, Chris Gregg, much bigger than Jarius. Much bigger than Jarius Wright. Maybe not as fast, but you know, you don't have to. You're not going to beat Alabama with 60-yard plays. You need to beat Alabama with 65-yard plays if you can consistently make those yards.
And I would think maybe this receiving core has the ability to do that because of their size, because of the hands. We haven't seen a lot of dropped passes out of this group, which is something. I mean, as good as Joe and Jarius and Greg were, they dropped a lot of passes. I mean, I think
particularly Joe.
Yeah, the first play of the Sugar Bowl in 2000.
Which would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, should have been a touchdown. He drops it. So that's why I say this group of receivers maybe is better suited for beating Alabama. But, you know, we've got another week before we break that all down. But I like the passing game. I think the running game is going to be okay for these guys.
Yeah, I think the thing with the running game is we haven't seen the backs really make a play. The longest run by a running back was 13 yards, you know, and that was by Nile Davis, who it was his first real game since the Sugar Bowl in January of 2011. And Coach Petrino talked about it both after the game and again yesterday when we spoke to him after practice on Tuesday. You know, there were a couple of plays where it looked like Nile might just make that one move and score, and it didn't happen. But those are the type of plays that will probably start happening maybe as early as this week against ULM.
Yeah, and I thought Nile had a good take. I think it was Nile that said this, or maybe it was Paul, but one of them made the point. Big running plays happen, so you don't go out there and try to force it. But eventually, Nile will get free for a long run. We'll see Dennis with a long run. I mean, Dennis's overall yards per carry was great. He averaged, 7.5 yards a carry?
Mm-hmm. And didn't fumble.
And didn't fumble. You know, which is funny because a lot of other people were fumbling, but he managed to hold on to the ball. But eventually, you'll see them break free. They'll do what Brandon Allen did with that 27-yard run.
You know, what my favorite part about that play was, have you seen that play?
No, I haven't.
He drops back to pass, doesn't see anything, kind of rolls to his right, takes off down the right side of the field, cuts across the middle of the field all the way over to the left side and had the presence of mind to switch the ball from his right hand to his left hand because that's for the outside hand now. Not a lot of quarterbacks know to keep the ball in your outside hand. I loved that about Brandon Allen's run.
Yeah, he's a savvy kid. I mean, he's a coach's kid. He's been around the game for a long time. He's an athletic quarterback. You'll see a little bit of that out of him in a couple years.
And he didn't slide. He kind of put his shoulder into a guy, which I also love when a quarterback will do that. It's probably not the smartest thing in the world.
No, of course not.
But I like when they show the tenacity.
Well, think about last year, the way Tyler Wilson kind of endeared himself to his teammates in those early games when he's diving on the goal line and you know.
Yeah, about got a concussion against New Mexico.
Really dumb, but, you know, he earned some points and, you know, it worked out well for him. So, you know, I mean, as long as Brandon's not doing it every time he takes the snap, he'll be okay.
What are your thoughts on John L. Smith game one? You know, there's a lot of the people that didn't like the hire from the first place want to pin anything negative on him. Like, oh, they didn't do this because of John L. Smith. What effect did he have on this game other than calling a few fourth down plays?
I mean, I don't want to say none because I think that discounts the good that he's doing with this team. But I mean, we had a commenter on the blog on ArkansasSports360.com, and he was saying it's clear that John L. is not the man for the job beyond this season.
It's clear.
It's clear. And my, you know, my reply to him was, look, I'm not agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just curious what you have seen that would, you know, lead you to that conclusion.
He's not calling plays. Either side of the ball.
Right. I mean, now he's very involved in the defensive side of the football. He's involved in special teams. You know, he has the presence of mind to, for the most part, leave Paul Petrino alone and let him do his thing. I just don't understand the overreaction. Arkansas rarely started well under Bobby Petrino. It usually took until midseason for any semblance of a running game to get going. The defense was never great. You know, the offensive line always seemed to need a little time to develop. So I'm not sure what people are seeing. The fumbles are the one thing that people are going to point to. I think this is purely coincidental. It's a great fact, but I think it's pure coincidence. The first game before Bobby got here, the 2008 Cotton Bowl, Arkansas fumbled five times, lost the ball three times.
That whole game was a disaster.
It was awful. Bobby gets here. They go four seasons. The most they ever have is two fumbles.
Then fumbles lost, right?
Fumbles lost. Then the first game without Bobby Petrino, Arkansas fumbles four times, loses three of those. So the game before Bobby Petrino and the game after Bobby Petrino, three fumbles. It bookends it nicely. It's interesting.
It's poetic. It's coincidence.
I think it is pure coincidence. And the fact that somehow that, you know, the fumbles, it's just dumb. I mean, like, did Bobby just will these guys not to fumble? I would argue – I mean, what, go ahead. You were about to say something.
No, I was just going to say there's been plenty of costly fumbles when Petrino was the coach, particularly the Kentucky game his first year. You know, Dennis fumbled last year at Ole Miss, nearly cost him the game. So it's not like they had played with glue on their hands when Bobby was here.
Broderick Green at Auburn. I mean, you can
that
argue –
that was a killer fumble.
That cost them the football game.
Personally, I think he was down, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know – it. You
still you shouldn't have fumbled.
Right. He shouldn't have fumbled. He should have held on to the football. If you want to talk about, yes, two fumbles is the most they ever had in a game, but that happened multiple times under Bobby, and they were very costly. It's not like they never fumbled. Arkansas had this amazing streak under Houston Nutt, with McFadden and Hillis and Felix Jones. And they had even before that, they had this great streak of games and carries without a fumble. Well, that's really cool. Let's not act like that happened when Bobby was here. There were fumbles. There were costly fumbles. Mm-hmm. The fact that there were three fumbles the game before he got here, three after he got here, complete coincidence, and a total overreaction, you know, to John L. being on the sidelines.
In a lot of ways, I think those three fumbles might end up being a good thing in the long run because, of course, they won the game, so it was no harm, no foul. But it's certainly going to create a lot more attention for all the backs and receivers to hold on to the ball better because they know, they understand you can't do that in SEC games and win.
Right. And these, for the most part, I mean, there were just some, you know, I mean, they just have to hold on to the football. I mean, it's not like I don't think Jacksonville State was, you know, there were these colossal collisions that were knocking the ball loose and you know, jarring the ball from the
grip. Even like amazing strips. Like,
right.
They were just holding the ball out and they dropped it.
It was just being really careless. So, I think they'll be fine. The funny thing is, I mean, like the one running back who's always fumbling is Dennis Johnson. He didn't fumble. And then Nile Davis, everybody was wondering, oh, my God, especially you. My God, he didn't get hit in practice. He's going to fumble 12 times. And he was okay. He got knocked backwards a few times he shouldn't have, but
that was not
fumbled.
His fault. That was the Lions' fault. The new polls came out Tuesday. In the AP, Arkansas moved up to 8. They stayed at 10 in the USA Today coaches. I don't have a vote. You don't have a vote, do you?
No, I don't want to vote.
I like to put out my own top 10 just for fun. I didn't do it in the preseason because, and I think you and I agree on this, preseason polls are pure speculation. We haven't seen a single game of football from this season. Now that we have, I put out a top 10. I initially moved Arkansas back a spot because of the fumbles and the defensive issues. Not because I don't think Arkansas is a top 10 team, but because all I can do is vote based off of what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Some passionate fans got back at me on Twitter and actually convinced me to move them back into the top 10. I left them at 10. I think that's kind of where they belong right now. Obviously, AP put them at 8. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with them being at 8. 10 would be low enough, especially Michigan loses ahead of them. Anything above 8, though, I don't agree with. Although Georgia, I mean, I was not impressed with them. So if you wanted to flip-flop Arkansas and Georgia, I guess you could.
Well, I'm looking at the poll, and, you know, Carolina didn't play great, but outside of Alabama, they played the best team of anybody in the top 10 in week one. They went on the road at a very feisty Vanderbilt team that's very well coached and won. I don't care where you are. It's not easy to win on the road in the SEC.
Yeah,
I think that deserves credit. So I kept Carolina in front of Arkansas.
I wouldn't argue with you about that.
Michigan State played a ranked Boise State team. Are they as good as last year's Boise? Probably not. But they're still very well coached, and they're talented, and I think that deserves – I have Michigan State in front of Arkansas because they had one of the more impressive wins of week one.
I wouldn't disagree with you on that either.
I mean, I have West Virginia in front of Arkansas. They scored 69 points.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. I don't care who you're playing. That's ridiculous.
That's like midseason form for Holgorsen and that offense. So I won't talk you out of that.
So that's – you know, I moved Georgia behind Arkansas – once the Hog fans got on, man, and I relooked at some box scores and stuff. But
well, yeah, because, I mean, what did Georgia really do? I mean,
they played Buffalo, who's better than Jacksonville State probably. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they didn't – offensively, they weren't very impressive, you know, statistically. So it's kind of a toss-up there. It's too bad they don't play on the field because I think Arkansas is probably better than Georgia.
I do, too.
So,
and I think it'll bear itself out. I think eventually you'll see Arkansas ranked ahead of Georgia before it's all said and done. The thing that really interested me was not so much what happened in the bottom half of the top 10, but what was going on up in the top half of the top 10. I came away impressed with two teams in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're probably going to agree on this. Alabama, I mean, is there anybody in the country that wasn't impressed with what Alabama did to Michigan, even knowing that Michigan went into that game overrated?
Yeah, maybe Michigan's not the 8th best team in the country, but they're one of the best probably 15 teams in the country.
They're top 25.
Fine. What are semantics? Alabama embarrassed them.
Yeah.
It was 31-0 in the first half
on
a neutral field that Michigan brought plenty of fans to. That was a statement. And not only was it a statement about how good Alabama is, it's a continuous statement of SEC versus Big Ten, which other than Ohio State beating Arkansas in the Sugar Bowl, has been very, very, very one-sided in recent history.
Yeah, it has been. And, I think we talked about this either last week or maybe it was over lunch. I don't know. I can't keep up. But the storyline going into the season was going to be, can anyone knock off the SEC? You know, the ESPN, the magazine cover with the voodoo, the SEC voodoo dolls on it. ESPN's been talking about it, CBS, all the national outlets have been having that conversation. That was going to be the narrative based upon this opening game. If Michigan wins, then, oh, my God, the SEC is vulnerable. this is going to be the year that someone sneaks up and gets them, or if Alabama won and won convincingly, it was going to be the SEC will never lose a game ever again. That's where we're at right now. People are freaking out. But that was impressive. That was very, very impressive what they came out and did in the opener. They just demolished them.
I don't think the Alabama-Michigan game answers the question whether or not the SEC will win a seventh in a row, because the real two contenders to knock them off are in the Pac-12.
Yes.
And USC looked very, very good against Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And then, as you can attest to with your very own eyes, Oregon is ridiculous. They scored 50 points, and there was 7 minutes left in the second quarter. They could have scored 130 points against Arkansas State if they wanted to.
They legitimately could have. They could have scored 100 points. I think
they could have scored well over 100.
Legitimately, they were on pace. I think I figured it up. They were on pace for like 805 yards and 124 points or something. It was as dominant a performance as I've seen. Now, I know there are going to be people, particularly Arkansas fans, who see Arkansas State as little brother, who are going to say, "Well, it was just a Sun Belt school. It was ASU. They were crappy."
That's a team that won 10 games last year.
Yes. I would also remind you, you played a school that was not even in the Sun Belt, that's 1AA, an FCS team, and
was losing in the first half.
Kind of squeaked out that win. So this is the—
Well, they didn't squeak it out.
I mean, no, squeaked out is probably the wrong—
They won by 25 points. But they were losing
to a D1AA team. That Oregon performance is as impressive of a beatdown as I have ever seen. The only thing that I have witnessed with my own eyes, like in the stadium in person, was Arkansas at Texas in 2008.
Oh, yeah, Colt McCoy.
That was brutal. They just brutalized Arkansas. So not all blowouts, not all wins against easy opponents are the same. They're just, I mean, everyone's different. This was a impressive victory for Oregon. People are not putting a lot of stock into it because it was a Sun Belt school with a first-year coach. They lost a bunch of guys on defense last year, but I'm telling you, this offense – this Oregon offense is unbelievable. DeAnthony Thomas, we did our Arkansas Sports 360 football preview magazine. We listed 10 guys that could be Heisman Trophy contenders. We listed DeAnthony Thomas. I saw with my own eyes why. 7 touches, 119 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And blazing speed.
SEC speed.
He's arguably the fastest guy in the country.
Yeah.
Regardless of conference.
He is a legitimate Heisman Trophy contender. A lot of people want to say Denard Robinson at Michigan. Whatever. This kid at Oregon is a legitimate Heisman Trophy contender. A lot of people were blowing me up on Twitter. Yeah, well, he couldn't do that in the SEC. He absolutely
could make plays. Yes. Absolutely. Would he be as dominant as he was against Arkansas State? No. But would he be one of the best players in the league? Yes.
Absolutely. Arkansas would love to have him.
He would start. He would start for every team in the SEC.
And you could put him anywhere. You could put him at receiver. You can put him at running back. He can return kicks. He can return punts. He's a phenomenal player. So it was fun to watch him and kind of see with my own eyes. And I thought this going in last week. I thought Oregon and USC were going to be two teams that probably one of them was going to match up with Alabama or LSU or Arkansas in the national championship game. I come out of last week thinking that the national championship is either going to be Alabama or USC or Oregon.
You taking LSU out of the conversation? Because I went into the season thinking LSU is the best team in the country.
For now. But I mean, I wouldn't be stunned. Yeah, I mean, I get probably the four best teams are exactly how they're ranked. It's Alabama, Southern Cal, LSU, and Oregon.
And I think there's a big drop after the top four, personally.
I do too.
I have Florida State number 5 in my personal rankings. That's mainly based on what I've read other people writing. I don't know a whole lot about the Seminoles, and I do know they just lost one of their better defensive players for the season. But again, the ACC hasn't really produced title contenders in the last decade. Clemson got embarrassed in the Orange Bowl last year. You know, beyond them, Oklahoma looked dreadful at UTEP. We've discussed Georgia and Carolina have flaws. Arkansas has flaws. West Virginia can score a whole bunch, but they can't stop anybody.
Yeah.
You know, Michigan State, They've won 11 games a couple years in a row, but I don't know that they're a title contender. You know, they played Alabama in a bowl game 2 years ago and got smacked, and that was a three-loss Alabama team. So I think beyond Alabama, LSU, and then USC, Oregon, that's a top four that if they met in a playoff would be just outstanding.
You know there's going to be a team somewhere in that top 15, maybe even down in the top 25, that continues to build momentum as the year goes on. I would not be stunned if Wisconsin was one of those teams in the conversation.
They almost lost to Northern Iowa. They're working in a new quarterback. The transfer from NC State, is it?
No, last year was NC State. That was Russell Wilson. Where's this guy from?
Boston College?
Who cares? It's Wisconsin. Why are we even having this conversation? The top four teams in the country are clear. I mean, and I don't know how you rank them. I think Alabama's got to be number one right now.
They've beaten the best team of the four.
You can flip-flop the rest of those three. They may jockey for position throughout the year.
It's semantics because they're going to play each other. Alabama and LSU will play each other. Southern Cal and Oregon will more than likely play each other twice, which is why I think it will be difficult for one of them to make it to the title game because there's a good chance they split. And then they each have a one loss, and if there's an undefeated Oklahoma or a Florida State, even though they're probably worse than USC or Oregon – they're undefeated, and they probably get that spot in the game.
Yeah, but the Pac-12 is the conference this year besides the SEC.
But only because of the top. Who else is good in that league? Is anybody even ranked? I'm looking at the rankings here. I don't even see another Pac-12 team. Stanford's 25.
Washington probably could creep up in there. You're like, man, what are you talking about? That could
Washington would be a bottom third SEC team.
Well, I'm not. I mean, we're not having that debate.
That's what I'm saying,
most
though.
Most of the top 25 would be bottom third SEC teams.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're saying the Pac-12 is the preeminent conference outside the SEC, and I'm saying only because of the top two. There's nobody else in that league.
What does the SEC
I think the
have?
Big 12 top to bottom is tougher than the Pac-12 top to bottom. I just think there's two teams in the Pac-12 that are better than anybody in the Big 12.
And the SEC's got two, maybe three teams, just like last year.
There's five teams in the top 10 from the SEC.
Nah, they won't be when it's all said and done.
That's beside the point.
How
Vanderbilt would finish third in the Pac-12.
No.
I honestly believe
based
that.
Based upon what?
Based upon watching them play.
Based upon losing at home to an okay South Carolina team that has no offense?
Vanderbilt is a feisty team.
Feisty.
If you're not a believer in James Franklin, then you don't belong on this planet.
No, I like James Franklin. I just don't know when feisty suddenly.
Who's better in the Pac-12 outside of the top two than Vanderbilt? Stanford?
Yes.
You're telling me right now, sight unseen, no more Andrew Luck, no more all those guys he played with, Stanford's better than Vanderbilt.
And you're telling me feisty entitles you to be in the top 25?
No, I'm telling you,
one of the three best teams in a...
I'm telling you, feisty gets you a third spot in the Pac-12.
I think you basically are on record now saying feisty puts you in the league with USC and Oregon.
Feisty is not a term I throw around lightly. There are good teams that aren't feisty. If you know what I mean?
Sure. But, I mean, feisty is the neighborhood dog around the corner. That's not –
Feisty can beat anybody on any given day.
Oh, boy. You want to drop any more cliches on me?
I'm just speaking the truth here. If you can't handle it, you know, Tom Cruise, if you can't handle the truth here.
Next thing you're going to tell me is that Arkansas needs to execute.
Did you order the code red?
You can't handle the truth.
All right. That's silly. But I honestly believe Vanderbilt would get third in the Pac-12. I really do.
Okay.
Certainly Arkansas would be no worse than third. And Georgia, South Carolina, I don't know. Who's good beyond that? I don't know.
I'll tell you this. I am not prepared to have the argument of where Vanderbilt would finish in the Pac-12. I can tell you feisty does not qualify you. Do you know what that is? That's not even a compliment. Like, that's when, you know, in college, like, there was a really hot girl that you wanted to go out with, and she was like, oh, you're cute. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, my puppy dog, that's cute. Or like, little kids, you know, in bow ties, that's cute.
So
nobody wants to be cute.
So you're saying feisty is a backhanded compliment?
Yes. How is that a compliment?
Because they play above their capabilities. which is a sign of good coaching.
I do think they're well coached. I think they're a better program than they were. I just don't think that being feisty qualifies them to win the Pac-12.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I'll back off one step. They'll get fourth. I'll let Utah finish third because Utah's all right.
Okay.
How about that? Are we good now? All right? All right?
I had forgotten Utah was even
Lieutenant
in the Pac-12.
Caffey, are we okay? On the spot.
All right.
If you're new to the program, this is a segment called On the Spot. Chris and I will ask each other to discuss something that the other is unaware of what that will be. Chris, I put you on the spot first last week, so I guess it's only fair that you put me on the spot this week.
Okay. I would like to know if I pulled out your CD collection or your 8-tracks or your iPod.
My 8-tracks, yeah. Big collection. Three Dog Night, sure.
Nice. A Three Dog Night reference. If I pulled out your music collection, I want to know what is the most embarrassing thing on there, and I want you to justify why you own it.
Okay, I'll answer that question, but let me qualify this. I haven't bought a CD since who knows when. I don't even download full CDs, albums. I download songs I like. There is one song on there that I've actually discussed this with my wife before. This is probably the song, if somebody ever asked me, what's the most embarrassing song that you absolutely guiltlessly love?
Yeah.
It's called Just Another Day by John Cicada.
Oh, yes.
I don't have it on this computer in front of me. Are you familiar with the song?
Yeah,
I will pull it up on
just
YouTube.
Just Another Day without – absolutely.
Who just Another Day. It's a classic.
Who doesn't love a little John Cicada?
And, it's a classic.
And
you know,
so
perhaps
– why
– why do I like this
song? That you're unashamed of it.
Oh, I'm cranking it up. I don't know if they can hear this on the microphone. This is a classic.
Oh,
this
the
is,
beach,
oh,
walking down
video.
The beach, and the sun's shining.
Look at this video.
And the wind's blowing.
Is she, like, modeling? What is she doing?
Oh, he's...
If you're listening, go ahead and pull up Just Another Day video on YouTube. That's what we're watching here.
Oh, yeah.
Why do I like this song? Not really sure, but I just do. And I'm not embarrassed to say that.
I'm proud of you for this. I don't necessarily hate this song. I'm not going to...
But it's not exactly...
Let John...
Oh, it's touching. Let's see, are we getting levels?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. But this isn't exactly the song if you were taking a girl out on a date. You're like, hey, let me put this song on for you as you drive to the restaurant here. This is my jam. No.
Oh, what? He's sitting backwards in the chair. Now he's walking down the beach. Shirt, and of course the shirt is unbuttoned.
He's got a lot of holes in his jeans. There's a lot of seagulls on this beach. He looks heartbroken.
He is. He is heartbroken.
Give me a reason.
Oh, that was perfectly timed. The waves crashing behind him.
This is such a cliche music video.
Okay.
All right, wait, no. Okay, same question
this
for you.
This has been viewed over 3.6 million times,
and
by the
because
way.
It's awesome. John Cicada. Just Another Day. What's your answer to that question?
I'm going to go a little different direction. I think we all have guilty pleasures. But the one there is one song. I'm a big music guy, so
yeah.
Especially when I sit down to write or read, you know, and research on stuff, I've got the headphones in, I got my iTunes going or Spotify, whatever. So I got iTunes pulled up the other day. You know, and I'm running the gamut. We got Wilco and Tupac and Outkast and Otis Redding, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, pops up David Archuleta.
Is that the American Idol guy?
From the little 12-year-old Mormon boy from American Idol, singing "Think of Me" from the musical Phantom of the Opera.
Think of me fondly.
Now,
isn't that the song?
That is the song. Now, I do not like. First of all, Phantom of the Opera is fantastic.
I am not ashamed to say I enjoy musicals and I like show tunes.
Hey, super.
Not embarrassed to say that.
No, and you shouldn't be. So I saw Phantom of the Opera. The wife and I were in Vegas a couple years ago. We went to the theater.
Great
you know,
show.
That's fantastic. Love that song. Love the soundtrack to Phantom of the Opera.
Great soundtrack.
I'm not afraid to tell you that.
No.
What I do not understand is why I have David Archuleta's version of Think of Me it's on my computer.
Oh, yeah.
It is in there. And, you know, everything...
You took the effort and the time to get it there.
I don't think I put it there. There's no
explanation.
Gremlins do it? It had to... Maybe my wife did
it. Were you drunk?
Maybe my wife did it as a joke. The second question you asked me, I will say that sometimes late at night, you might come, I mean, especially impulse purchases, we all do it. We all buy the, you know, the magazine or the roll of pink duct tape or whatever. Sure. At the, you know, at the shopping market. We just do that sometimes. You buy crap you don't need. I buy crap I don't need sometimes. Wife's watching American Idol, and they do the Billy Joel catalog. And I'm like, you know what?
I love Billy Joel.
I kind of like some Billy Joel. So I download his greatest hits. It's a double disc.
Yeah.
I have 50 Billy Joel songs. I sure. like three of them.
What?
Yeah.
That's all you like from Billy Joel? That's un-American, sir.
No, it's not un-American. You know, We Didn't Start the Fire is complete crap.
Yeah, but it's a fun song.
Yeah, but it's crap. It's not even fun. No, it's terrible. It's terrible.
You're terrible.
So what I'm telling you, I have things, sometimes impulse purchases. Sometimes you buy stuff that you just don't need. You don't understand why you have it. There is no explanation. No amount of anything, no drugs, no alcohol, nothing could justify the fact that I have David Archuleta think of me fondly. But I refuse. The River of Dreams, Billy Joel, is total crap.
Yeah, that's such a pop song. There's so much great Billy. I'm looking at this. There's so great song.
Let me say
good song.
Say them out loud.
Okay, And So It Goes is a great song.
Sure.
The Longest Time is a great song.
Sure.
Good Night Saigon is a beautiful song. She's Got Away, beautiful song. You May Be Right, great song. Still Rock and Roll to Me, great song. My Life, great song. What is wrong with you, Chris Bond? I could keep going.
Do the great songs, though, make up for the really, really crappy ones?
You don't have to listen to the crappy ones. That's the beauty of iTunes.
I do have
you
to.
Can
just
put
pop,
on your
they
playlist.
They just pop up. They pop up.
Well, then sometimes, organize your iTunes.
Sometimes they pop up. You don't mean for them to, such as David Archuleta's Think of Me.
And I will think of you every time I listen to Billy Joel and like it. Quick sidebar. Going back to musicals, I just had a birthday last week. My wife surprised me with two tickets. We're going to see Book of Mormon in Broadway next summer on Broadway.
Oh, very
I
cool.
I am psyched. I'm a huge South Park fan, and
yep.
I love Trey Parker. I think he's a genius. And Book of Mormon, of course, cleaned up at the Tonys last year. And I've talked to a few people that have seen it, and they said they literally died laughing. Like, I am so excited. Plus, I haven't been in New York City in years, so that'll be fun, too.
Yeah, congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm excited.
All right. We're really kind of digging deep into our souls here on the show, Graham.
Hey, you know, the show, Graham, we talk sports, but we get off the topic. We want you to get to know myself and Chris a little bit better. And for that exact reason, I'm going to get real personal with you, Chris, here on the spot. Boxers, briefs, or boxer briefs, and why?
I typically go with the boxer briefs. Well, because it's the best of both worlds. They're a little roomier than the briefs. They give you a little more coverage.
You don't want to go with the Walter White, Tidy Whiteys
No,
thing?
That's bad. But then I do have one pair of boxers that I'm fond of. They're Christmas Story. You ever seen that movie?
Have I seen the Red Ryder BB gun? I've seen it 100 times.
So I have Christmas Story boxers, and they have like the lamp that's
the leg lamp. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
That's outstanding. I got those for Christmas last year. So on special occasions, I break out the Christmas Story boxers. Typically, I go boxer briefs.
The reason I asked this question, I've been a boxer guy for, 20 years maybe, and just this week, I switched to boxer briefs.
Hey.
It was a big move in my life. More than half of my life, I have worn boxers. And I made the move this week, and so far, so good. You know, as I get older, I just turned 29 last week, I find that gravity's working a little more and need a little more support. You'll turn a little red there, Chris. Are we not trying to let the listeners get to know us here?
Maybe
is
not
too
so much?
Much. TMI?
Maybe we don't let them know that much.
Grow up, people. Come on. This is America. We can talk about these things. All right, that's what we call on the spot. I think I've embarrassed Chris enough for today.
Underpants and show tunes. We've learned so much about you today.
And show tunes. That is what you're not getting that on other sports radio stations. That's what the Showgram brings to you. All right, we're running out of time here before people turn us off because of what we've just been discussing. I'm going to go ahead and throw out the words spoiler alert. For the next couple of minutes, if you have not watched the midseason finale of Breaking Bad or anything from this half season, fast forward a few minutes because we're going to talk about it right now. Holy moly. Hank has finally figured out who is number one while taking a number two.
Oh, you have been working all weekend on that, haven't
you? Stole that joke from one of the critiques I read.
Okay.
Stole it.
It was. I had a hunch that that's where we were headed. If you remember last week, we made our predictions for the season finale of Breaking Bad, and I said I think Hank either comes into a piece of information that will lead him to figure it out, or he figures it out, and we basically are at that point now. And he did it in the bathroom, where quite honestly, I think a lot of us, if you're like me, you do some of your best thinking.
Sure, I won't argue with that. The questions I have are, where do we go from here? There's 8 more episodes, and they could go any number of directions now. Is Walter really out? He told Skyler he's out.
Right.
He's done.
I'm not sure.
Part of me
that.
Doesn't believe him, but the other part of me wants to believe him.
Right.
But how do you do 8 episodes of him not being in the meth business anymore? And the only answer I can come up with is there's got to be fallout from him truly getting out of the business. He just cut that big deal with those Arizona people about using his product, and now he's going to get out. They're going to be mad.
Yeah, they're going to be mad. I think he was a little reckless with training the new guy. What was his name?
Todd.
May have been a little reckless there, left some loose ends that maybe somebody comes upon.
Notice Todd wrote everything down.
Right.
That's evidence.
Yep. Hank is starting to put it all together. You've got the guys in Arizona. You've still got the family. I mean, Skyler, who knows what his crazy wife is going to do. Jesse, what is Jesse going to figure out all the terrible, terrible things that—
He's got to, right? Like, the writers can't deny us that.
Right.
Because Jesse needs to see Walt— You know, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
Type moment.
Yeah. So it's all it's these next 8 episodes that start in, I think, like 4 years from now, I think, is when it comes back, or 10 months. What's the difference?
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime.
It's going to be a really long wait, but there are a lot of different directions they could go, and that is why Breaking Bad is the best show in TV.
It's amazing.
Quite honestly, that's why it's worthy of discussing for a couple minutes on the show, Graham.
You know, I've been saying for years, at some point in this series, there's going to come a scene where it's just Hank and Walt in a room, and all the cards are on the table, and it's going to be epic. And we finally got a taste on Sunday that scene is coming, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be glorious. I cannot wait.
What a show!
I don't. You know, I'm gonna. A lot of times we're going to talk about this show, and I'm not going to have a whole lot to say, but just because there just aren't a lot of words that can describe how much I love watching this show.
But at the same time, there aren't enough words to describe how great the show is. And,
yeah.
and seriously, if you have no idea what we're talking about right now, it is worth it. Go rent the DVDs, borrow them from a friend. Hey, flat out buy them. You will not regret it.
Don't steal them.
Yeah, don't steal. Go to the library. Can't you rent that stuff for free at the library?
Probably. Do you have a library card?
I don't.
I do.
I've never even set foot in the Fayetteville Library. It's a great, beautiful building. I drive by it almost every day.
Almost got run off the road by a truck earlier today.
Yeah,
near the Fayetteville
today.
Library.
What was up with that Miller Lite truck? Stay on your side of the road.
Pick a lane, sir.
Yeah, Breaking Bad. Tell you what, if you buy the DVDs and you don't like the show, I'll buy them from you.
Yeah,
find
we'll reimburse
me and,
you.
And I'll, because I don't own them and I'd like to. It's something I'd be proud to have in my DVD collection.
You should have it.
I know I should. I own The Wire, all but the last season. That's another great show.
Yeah, I've got that. Actually, I own that, and then I own a whole lot of comedy movies.
Yeah, good comedy. All right, we're coming up on an hour here, so let's start the wrap-up. By the way, at the end of spoiler alert, so
okay.
if you're looking for the end of the spoiler alert as you're fast-forwarding, you can come back to reality here. Hogs play ULM this week. What are you looking for? What are your thoughts going into that game?
I just, you know, I want to see if the shakeup, the inevitable shakeup we think is coming in the secondary, see if that makes any sort of difference. I want to see what this offense looks like with Kobe Hamilton healthy, because we didn't really get a taste of that. So I'm anxious to see what he looks like when he's out there and able to take pressure off these other receivers. I want to see Nile Davis break a couple long runs and, you know, tackling. That would be nice.
Yeah. I agree with you on a couple of those. You know, Kobe, especially because Paul Petrino discussed openly yesterday how much they build the offense around his capabilities and throwing him the ball. I agree with you. The running backs need to break a couple of runs because 13 yards is not good enough as your longest run for a game. The most important thing I'm looking for, and I'm not going to say flawless, but the Razorbacks need to play a start-to-finish excellent game. because that's the only way I'll feel any confidence for them heading into Alabama. Because they don't have more time. Time is not on their side. The Crimson Tide is coming whether they like it or not.
Oh, they'll be here September 15th. It'll be a big deal.
You think game day is coming?
I would not be shocked.
They should come.
I'm going to predict it now. I would not be shocked if game day winds up coming, because this game will be that big. It's been a few years. 2006 was the last time, the first and only time the game day was here. This game has turned into something where the winner is going to be in the driver's seat in the league maybe for a little while for the national championship. So it's a huge game, a lot on the line. I would not be stunned if game day winds up here.
You know, if nothing changes in the polls, it'll be 1-8, which should be reason enough for game day to come. The only reason they might not, I would think, is, it's a CBS game and game day. ESPN typically likes to go to either an ESPN or an ABC game.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always the case. I haven't looked at the schedule. I was talking with Trey Dare about this the other day. He said Stanford plays Oregon, I think, that same day. He thought maybe that might – and that's an ESPN or ABC game. He thought that might steal game day. But I don't know how you can not go to 1-8, especially at this point in the season. You don't get those kind of matchups all that often in the first half of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, surely they've got that one. They've got that one circled. Let's see. I'm trying to see here.
Go to week 3. He's pulling up the schedule here, folks.
All right, this is really riveting internet radio. So
no, it's not Oregon.
Let's see here.
You're looking at September 15th.
Yeah. Okay. 15th. Virginia Tech.
Does USC play Stanford? Maybe.
Wake Forest, Florida State.
No, Wake Forest isn't any good. Scroll down. Keep going down. Look, find
Connecticut and Maryland. How did they pass up on that?
There's Alabama, Arkansas. I mean, obviously that's – oh, there it is. Stony Brook at Syracuse. That's the game.
Oh, yeah. Those are your
game.
People,
did you
right?
watch that game on Saturday? Man, we got hosed.
Syracuse?
Yeah, we played a shootout with Northwestern, and there was a late roughing the passer penalty. It was garbage.
This is the most boring thing you've ever said on the podcast.
The most boring thing ever said on the podcast.
And it may go.
Yeah, USC plays at Stanford. It's a night game. So that looks like the only contender. You know, that's 1-25 in the new AP. Or not one, but 2-25.
Yeah, the rest of these get Notre Dame, Michigan State, 22-11.
It's not 1-8.
It's not.
And that's not an ESPN game either, probably. Although it might be. I don't
that
know.
It could be ABC.
Whatever. We have gotten boring here at the end. Let's wrap it up. Tell the fake folks what's coming up. They can read on ArkansasSports360.com.
We'll have our usual game week coverage of the Arkansas Razorbacks Friday. We'll have our pregame columns. As I told you all last week, we always like to have them posted by noon. That way you slackers can get out of the office early on Fridays. Saturday we'll have our in-game coverage, live game blog from Jim Harris, column from him. I'll have the two-minute drill notes package and a recap column of the Louisiana-Monroe game. And, just the usual great stuff you'll find on ArkansasSports360.com. Adam, would you like to pimp anything on Razorback Nation?
Would I? Yeah, of course, we got Gear Up for Game Day Friday nights. That's at 10:15 on KNWA and KARK. It's a 15-minute get you ready for game day. A couple of great stories for you there. And then, of course, Saturday, this year we've started our one-hour game day show. The time kind of fluctuates depending on what's going on. This week it's from 10 to 11. We'll be live out at War Memorial. You're welcome to come. We encourage you to come. We'll put you on TV if you make a sign. I think we've got some giveaways going on. Go to nwahomepage.com to get that information, or arkansasmatters.com. And then, of course, we'll have post-game coverage if you can't make it to the game. We get like the first like 6 or 7 minutes of our 10 o'clock newscast with highlights and reaction. So check it out. Ooh, is that a picture from Oregon?
That is a picture from Oregon.
Wow,
yeah.
That looks beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's the Oregon coast. It's fantastic. Lava rocks, and somewhere in there, there's sea lions. It's a very beautiful place. People should go to Oregon sometime.
Yeah, I've never been out there. All right, this has been the Show Graham podcast from Chris Bond of ArkansasSports360.com. Myself, Adam Alter from the Razorback Nation. We do this for you. We encourage you to give us all the feedback you can handle, positive or negative. We want to cater this to your likes. Hit us up on Twitter. We're very accessible. Chris is CBahn, CBAHN, and I'm Adam_Alter. That's Alter, E-R. not AR, but ER. Okie dokie. Parting thoughts, anything?
No.
Wise words?
No, I don't have anything. I was going to try to work in some sort of old school 90s rap reference today on the show. I failed, so I'll just say Rex in Effect.
Rex in Effect and Just Another Day by John Cicada. If you take nothing else away from this podcast, go look at that, listen to it, and guiltily love it. For Chris, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
See you.